Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Well, there's a great delay factor in the chat room on my on my screen. Must be the people at the on the job are partying hardy, right? Pastor Eli James here, along with William Fink, another installment of Christogenos, and we're rocking out the old year, 2010. We're going to be continuing our series on the book of Jeremiah. We got through chapter 20 last week. How are you doing, Bill?
Wonderful. Hello. Praise Yahweh.
Yeah. By the way, I know you were having problems in the chat room over at Micro Effect, but I think we made commercial radio history by doing those two shows, because I don't think I've ever heard a open and frank discussion of the Jewish question ever on commercial radio, especially talking about the fact that the Jewish people are not related in any way, shape, or form to the 12 tribes of Israel. I don't think anybody's ever said that on commercial radio before, so I think we made radio history.
If indeed they have any more commercials.
Yes, right, if they don't get tossed off the air and the Jews come down on them real hard. We'll see what happens, okay? But it's nice to have such a frank discussion about who the Jews really are and what they really are, and not have anybody tell you to shut up or cut you off, right?
Well, it's wonderful. It's just difficult to get it all in an hour with commercials.
Yes. Yeah, the more commercials, yeah, because it is a difficult subject to convey to people who have been taught for all their lives that the opposite is true, and now all of a sudden they have to switch gears. Well, the Bible says they're Jews, right?
Yeah. Well, right, it's worth doing it to try to reach new people and make them think, too, and the people at the Micro Effect are searching for something, right?
Yes, certainly. Okay, so do you have any recap of chapter 20 and the show we did last Friday.
Well, just a short paragraph that probably surprises you.
Yeah.
Jeremiah's indictment against the remnant of Judah basically culminated with chapter 19, right, where the people of Jerusalem told that their city would be destroyed, that they would be taken into captivity, and that their city would never be whole again.
Mm-hmm.
And Clifton wrote a paper on that and called it the broken bottle nation, and that's probably a very good term to call it by. Now, it really hasn't been whole again ever since. I mean, the 70 weeks nation wasn't really a whole nation.
Right.
It was a city-state that was constantly in a time of strife and subjugated by greater empires, right?
Right.
That now, with these chapters that follow, we'll see further reinforcement of that same message. In fact, we're going to see that the children of Judah have no choice. Their only salvation is going to be in captivity. They're told that explicitly. And we'll also see some parables which once again detail the reasons why Judah became so vile in the eyes of Yahweh. Parables that have everything to do with the fact that Judah was infiltrated by, and they in turn embraced, certain Canaanite peoples.
Mm-hmm.
Judah had become a race-mixed nation by this time, and we already saw in Jeremiah's chapters 2 and 11. By this means, they laid aside the Sabbath and the laws of Yahweh in favor of the merchants, which we saw in Jeremiah chapter 17. We saw America go through the same exact thing from the 1890s,
yes,
through the 1980s. And we're in the same exact shape the people of Judah were 2,600 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, by allowing the Edomites into Judah at that time, they permitted the government to be subverted by them, and America has done exactly the same thing. But of course, it's not a new story. The Jews have done this to numerous kingdoms and nations throughout history. Morano, Spain, you know, would be probably your first modern example of the Jews infesting Spain, primarily a white nation, until the Jews and the Arabs, the Moors, invaded and took it over. And they did it to Poland, they did it to Germany, they did it to Britain. They were kicked out of Britain twice, right? They've virtually done it to every Anglo-Saxon nation on the face of the earth at one time or another. And so here we are again. But fortunately, the prophecies tell us that this is the last time. This is the last time. Okay. All right, let's get into chapter 21. of Jeremiah, the word which came to Jeremiah from Yahweh when King Zedekiah sent to him Pashur, the son of Melchiah, and Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, the priest, saying, "Inquire, I pray you, of Yahweh for us, for Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, makes war against us, if so be that Yahweh will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, that he may go up from us." So a quick question here. What's the difference between Nebuchadrezzar and Nebuchadnezzar, who we find?
There isn't a difference. I think it's probably a scribal error.
Oh, okay.
I seriously doubt there is a difference.
Okay. All right. Very good. Verse 3. "Then said Jeremiah to them, thus shall you say to Zedekiah, thus says Yahweh Elohim of Israel, behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands, wherewith you fight against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans, which besiege you outside the walls, and I will assemble them into the midst of this city. And I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a strong arm, even in anger and in fury and in great wrath." So here's Yahweh talking to his people, Judah. Verse 6, "And I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast. They shall die of a great pestilence. And afterwards, says Yahweh, I will deliver Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his servants, and the people, and such as are left in this city from the pestilence, from the sword, and from the famine, into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those that seek their life. And he shall smite them with the edge of the sword. He shall not spare them, neither have pity, nor have mercy." So obviously Yahweh is very angry with his people Israel, and we can certainly expect him to be angry with us today, because we are engaging in the same type of unlawful activity that the Israelites, and specifically the house of Judah, was here, correct?
Well, absolutely. That the homosexuality and the adultery going on in this nation might have a secular face on it, but it is still the same. It correlates to the same exact practices that the ancient children of Israel partook in when they were diverted from the way of Yahweh, their God.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. They may as well call it Baal worship and
right.
be off having sex with other men in groves. It's
yes.
the same exact thing. It's the setting is different, but the ritual is the same. The vile practices are the same. There's absolutely no difference.
Yeah, and we learned from the same people.
Absolutely. It's learned from the exact same people in a different manner.
Right, right. And today it's called liberalism. So in those days, it was called Baal worship.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that it's exactly what Isaiah meant when he wrote that in that day, the vile will no longer be called liberal.
Mm-hmm.
That means that we'll go back to calling them vile.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Liberal is a euphemism for these disgusting bastards.
That's right.
That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. I have a few notes here.
Okay.
We note here that they tormented Jeremiah for the warnings he gave them.
Yes.
And now, when they're threatened by this outside power, they turn to Jeremiah.
Yeah.
They as soon as things turn bad, they turn to the prophet that they threatened.
Right. And they realize what he's saying is coming true.
Right. Well, right. This is the same attitude that most people have today. Their minds think of God only when crisis is at their door. Otherwise, they don't even want to hear God.
Right. Right. They're too comfortable.
In their sin, as we see in verse 6, in their sin, their God has become their enemy rather than their salvation.
Right. Right. And
an expectation and a hope in Yahweh demands that we remain obedient to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it's very obvious that he promises to chastise us at every point when we disobey him. And I guess our people don't consider the fact that we are his children and that we have a father who does chastise his children. They don't want to believe that he does that. Of course, that's not true. He is chastising us at this very moment. Okay. Any more up to verse 7 here? Hello?
We can make the same correlation with what the Jews have done with our society in destroying the family unit and removing the authority of the earthly father.
Mm-hmm.
Where a father has no authority over his own family anymore. And they'd rather have the government have authority. Well, they can't do that with Yahweh, right?
Right.
I mean, there's no higher power. So they deny his existence altogether.
Yes, they do. That's it. And even in the churches, they deny his existence. And they certainly deny the Son. Oh, he didn't. He never rose from the dead. That's a fairy tale, right? That's what they teach in many churches.
They're starting to do that for 30 years now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, verse 8. And to this people you shall say, thus says Yahweh, behold, I set before you the way of life and the way of death. As Joshua said, choose this day life or death. But for me and my family, we choose life. We choose Yahweh. Verse 9, he that abides in this city shall die by the sword, and by the famine, and by the pestilence. But he that goes out and falls to the Chaldeans, or surrenders really here in this case, to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live, and his life shall be to him for a prey. Now this, of course, is a strange prophecy, and what other time in history would Yahweh expect his children to surrender to an invading army? But of course, his prophets, and it wasn't just Jeremiah, but other prophets as well, told these sinful Judahites that this is going to be their fate, and if they don't accept this fate, then they will die.
Well, right. Their only salvation is in captivity, period.
Mm-hmm.
And in this very manner today, also the children of Israel are basically in captivity in Babylon before it falls.
That's right.
Well, these children of Israel were told, you go into captivity or you die. We saw over and over again in Ezekiel a message much stronger, that Ezekiel, Yahweh told Ezekiel that those who refuse to go into captivity in Babylon, they shall die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Ezekiel told the people. You must go into captivity in Babylon. Ezekiel was writing at the same time that Jeremiah was writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these prophets gave no quarter. Obviously, even Jeremiah and Jonah was another example. And even Moses, to some extent, was a reluctant prophet because he knew that the people didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear it, and it's still true today. Verse 10.
Well, right, but we saw in the beginning of Jeremiah that Jeremiah didn't feel that he was worthy to be a prophet of Yahweh. Mm-hmm. He felt that he was too young. And Moses also, Moses felt that he was, I think it was described as being slow of tongue.
Right.
He wasn't a good enough speaker
right.
to be a prophet of God.
Yes, yes. And it was too humble in the sense that, some of us have, fear of speaking in public, et cetera, et cetera. So those types of things were going on. And obviously Yahweh chooses humble men to deliver this message. Typically the rich and the super rich are not interested in delivering the message that you and I and the rest of Christian identity are bringing to the world today, right? We're not rolling in the money. And chances are, if you are rolling in the money, then you're tied in with Mystery Babylon, and you're part of this Mystery Babylon system. Verse 10, for I have set my face against this city for evil and not for good, says Yahweh. It shall be given into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. And touching the house of the king of Judah, say, hear you the word of Yahweh, O house of David. Thus says Yahweh, execute judgment in the morning and deliver him that is spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, lest my fury go out like a fire and burn that none can quench it because of the evil of your doings. So this judgment is going to be executed and nothing can be done about it because their evil is full and ripe and worthy of judgment. Verse 13, behold, I am against you, O inhabitant of the valley, and rock of the plain, says Yahweh, which say, who shall come down against us? Or who shall enter into our habitations? But I will punish you according to the fruit of your doing, says Yahweh, and I will kindle a fire in the forest thereof, and it shall devour all things round about it. Okay, any comments on these before I move on to chapter 22?
Well, I will punish you according to the fruit of your doings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's cause and effect.
Right.
People today think that they could do anything and not be punished.
Yes.
How could they think that they could escape the same judgment?
Yes.
And today they can only justify their sins by imagining that there is no God or by setting up a false God,
mm-hmm.
that this Hindu Jesus, right? That this, he's basically a Hindu Jesus that loves everybody.
Right.
It's not Christian whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's multiculturalism. It's multi-religious. The false prophet of the current age is that all religions are the same and there's no difference. And, you know, Jesus Christ, well, he may have claimed to be the Son of God and risen from the dead, but, you know, it's okay if you don't believe that. You know, if other religions don't believe that, no big deal either, right? We're all the same. And that's the basic message of these end times, is we're all the same. But the Bible says otherwise. All right, chapter.
Well, there was a let me elucidate this real quick. It's on the front page of the Saxon Messenger site. There was a in Britain last week, this Muslim organization set up a bunch of billboards and put these posters on them, and it made fun of the 12-day of Christmas poem.
Mm-hmm.
Or song, and it said,
yes.
On the second day, dead. On the third day, rape.
Oh, right.
On the fourth day, teenage pregnancies.
Yes.
And then there was abortion, raves. And then they put claiming that God has a son.
Oh,
Muslims are frontal attack on Christianity in a Christian land.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a little editorial about that poster on the front page of the Saxon Messenger site. And it basically says that, you know, if we said this about Muhammad, they would be rioting in the streets.
That's right.
And they say this about Christ in our land. And even if we don't respect our own Christian religion, we still have to respect our Western civilization, and they are assaulting it head on, and there's no outrage.
Yes.
There's no outrage. People are too drunk to care or too doped up on sex to care or whatever, but it doesn't seem like they care.
Yes.
And if you don't care about your society, you don't deserve a society. It's that simple.
Yes. Yeah. We've been dumbed down to the point that we have no idea what our civilization is all about. And as you said, too many people just don't care.
If this apathy continues, these people will be riding prayer rugs for Allah.
Yeah, that's right.
And they won't like it, but they will be doing it, or they will be put to the sword, just like the Byzantines from the 7th through the 13th centuries, that they were doing it or they were put to the sword.
Yeah.
That's what Islam is all about.
Okay, question in the chat room. How do I get the Saxon Messenger? Maybe you can put a link.
Well, go to christogenia.org and scroll all the way to the bottom, and you'll hit a link for this. There's a list of links for my project site, so go to my project page, or just go to saxonmessenger.christogenia.org.
Okay.
I know it's a long name, but.
Yeah. Okay, very good. All right, chapter 22, verse 1. Thus says Yahweh, go down to the house of the king of Judah and speak there this word, and say, hear the word of Yahweh, O king of Judah, that sits upon the throne of David, you and your servants and your people that enter in by these gates. Thus says Yahweh, execute you judgment and righteousness, and deliver the spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, and do no wrong, do no violence to the stranger, the fatherless, nor the widow, neither shed innocent blood in this place. So obviously there was a tremendous amount of oppression and corruption going on in the kingdom of Judah at this time. And the same thing is happening today. Our leadership is oppressing the people through taxation, through bringing in non-Aryan people from Mexico and elsewhere, giving them our money. And then they're having babies at our expense. They're giving them free housing, free education. And what's that expression the founders had? Taxation without representation? Well, we've got all right. Yeah.
This really isn't explicit, but where it says that the taking the spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, it has to be talking about borrowers and lenders. And the institution of an unfair money system,
mm-hmm.
in ancient Judah, very much like what we have, again, in all Christian nations that are controlled by the Canaanite moneylenders.
Right.
And Jeremiah knew what the sins of the nation were, and that's why, and we read it last week, at chapter 15, verse 10, he said, "Woe is me, my mother, that thou hast borne me a man of strife and a man of contention to the whole earth. I have neither lent on usury, nor men have lent to me on usury,
mm-hmm.
yet every one of them does curse me."
Right.
In other words, if you don't partake in the Babylonian money system that's out there in the world, people are going to,
mm-hmm.
they think something's wrong with you.
That's right. You're weird. Right?
And Jeremiah was evidently in that same shape. So we see that the sins of ancient Judah were very much parallel to what we have today.
Yes, yeah, it's almost a total replay, as you know, as we see. If we repeat history, if we don't learn from history, we're condemned to repeat it. Okay, verse 4, chapter 22. "For if you do this thing indeed, then shall there enter by the gates of this house kings sitting upon the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses, he and his servants and his people." So there's going to be an invader. Verse 5, "But if you will..."
Well, right, but he's saying that if they would only do his word,
right.
if they would only
right.
keep his law, it wouldn't be like that.
Right, yeah, I was looking ahead here, yeah. He's certainly saying, if we are righteous.
Well, he knows they're not going to be, right?
Right. Right, very good. Verse 5, "But if you will not hear these words, I swear by myself, says Yahweh, that this house shall become a desolation. For thus says Yahweh to the king's house of Judah, you are Gilead to me and the head of Lebanon." Yet
now, Gilead, I'm sorry, Gilead and Lebanon both evoke images of beautiful mountains where the people of God dwell.
Right. Right, yeah. So they are beautiful, but they are disobedient as well. "Yet surely will I make you a wilderness and cities which are not inhabited, and I will prepare destroyers against you, everyone with his weapons, and they shall cut down your choice cedars and cast them into the fire. And many nations shall pass by this city, and they shall say every man to his neighbor, why has Yahweh done this to this great city? Then they shall answer, because they have forsaken the covenant of Yahweh, their God, and worshipped others and served them." There's that very important word, covenant.
Well, right. And they didn't serve those gods by attending the churches of the different denominations, right?
Right.
That they basically served those gods by mixing with the other races and following the ways and the practices of the Canaanite nation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was a little more than just going to the wrong church.
Right, right. Verse 10, of course, our churches are promoting the same thing today. Verse 10, "Weep you not for the dead, neither bemoan him, but weep sore for him that goes away, for he shall return no more, nor see his native country. For thus says Yahweh touching Shalom, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, which reigned instead of Josiah his father, which went forth out of this place, he shall not return there anymore." Question, because they went away for 70 years, which is, I guess, in Old Testament times, let's say a generation and a half. Apparently, none of the captives came back alive. Most of them died in Babylon, and an entire new generation came back. Isn't that the case?
Well, absolutely. It was 70 years, and I don't recall any mention of anyone caught away in a captivity coming back.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that this entire generation had passed by then.
Right. Very good. Verse 12, "But he shall die in the place," I suppose this verse answers the question, "but he shall die in the place where they have led him captive and shall see this land no more."
Now, the name Zerubbabel rebuilt the temple, right? He led the first return back to Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
rebuilt the temple, and that name itself means sown in Babylon.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Seed of Babylon, actually. Yes, very good. Verse 13, "Woe to him that builds his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by wrong, that uses his neighbor's service without wages." Oh, man, we're talking about modern times, folks.
Well, right. These are this describes those same economic manipulators of today.
Yes.
That they'll hire you at the lowest wage possible, and then they cause inflation of the money system so that the low wage you got is even worth less.
That's right.
And then they tax after that.
That's right. By taxes, low wages, and inflation, they rob you constantly. Yes. And gives him not for his work. We're being robbed by these same people today. These Canaanites and Kenites who are in charge of our economic system are doing it. They're doing it to us right now. Verse 14, that says, I will build me a wide house and large chambers and cuts him out windows, and it is sealed with cedar and painted with vermilion. Of course, our oppressors today live in huge mansions. They live in penthouses on Wall Street. Verse 15, shall you reign because you clothe yourself in cedar? Did not your father eat and drink and do judgment and justice? And then it was all well with him. He judged the cause of the poor and needy. Then it was well with him. Was this not to know me, says Yahweh? Okay, so righteous by righteousness, we know Yahweh. Verse 17, but your eyes and your heart are not but for your covetousness and for to shed innocent blood and for oppression and for violence to do it. Therefore, thus says Yahweh concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, ah, my brother, ah, or ah, sister. They shall not lament for him, saying, oh, ah, Lord, or ah, his glory. He shall be buried with the burial of an ass, drawn and cast forth beyond the gates of Jerusalem. Is Yahweh talking about here Jehoiakim or Josiah? Because Josiah was actually a good king.
Well, right. He's talking about Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah.
Okay.
Right?
Because Josiah was actually one of the few good kings in Judah and
Israel. Well, yes, but his children didn't follow his example.
Right.
That's the way it always
is. Yes. Verse 20, go up to Lebanon and cry and lift up your voice in Bashan and cry from the passages, for all your lovers are destroyed. Okay.
And I believe that, you know, the Israelites are long gone from Lebanon.
Right.
This announcement is about Judah. That Judah should make it to the Canaanite race, that Judah should make the announcement to the Canaanite races with which Judah communed. All your lovers, all these Judahites, right,
mm-hmm.
are destroyed.
Right, right. Yeah, and actually at this point, since the captivity of the 10 northern tribes, and we talked about this briefly, I think, last time, the Samaritans who took the place of the Israelites that lived there from 745 BC until this point in time, they were not of Israel. Some of them were Sephardim from Babylon. Some of them were Edomites, and some of them were Arabs, right? And those people took the place of the Israelites. So Judah was surrounded, literally. The kingdom of Judah was literally surrounded by various Canaanite nations. Isn't that the situation?
Well, right. But a lot of the people in Samaria were also the white Adamites from other places.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't all Canaanites. It's,
yeah.
They were all from places in the Adamic world where the Assyrians had conquered.
Mm-hmm.
And the Assyrian conquest was basically bound by the Caucasus Mountains, by Anatolia and by Persia or Elam on the east. They didn't really go beyond those bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see that there were Adamites dwelling in all of those places, but yes, there were a lot of Canaanite strangers in the mountains of Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
That there were without a doubt many Hittites and Canaanites left behind, and the Edomites had sided with the Assyrians and with the Babylonians later on.
Right.
And they were basically allies of the Babylonians. The Edomites, we're told clearly that the Edomites tore the temple down when Babylon sacked Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
in 585, 586 BC. There's two scriptures, one in the Psalms and one in the Apocrypha, that tell us explicitly that the Edomites tore down the temple,
mm-hmm.
Jerusalem.
Just like the Jews were the allies of the Moors against Visigothic Spain, right? So, again, history repeating itself. Verse 21, I spoke to you in your prosperity, but you said, I will not hear. This has been your manner from your mouth, that you obey not my voice. The wind shall eat up all your pastors, and your lovers shall go into captivity. Surely then shall you be ashamed and confounded for all your wickedness. O inhabitant of Lebanon, that makes your nest in the cedars, how gracious shall you be when pangs come upon you, and the pain is of a woman in travail. Now, of course, we're talking about fair-weather friends here, right? And when trouble comes upon many of our Israelite brethren, then they turn, against us. Those of us who are actually trying to do what's right. Verse 24, as I live, says Yahweh, though Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet upon my right hand, yet would I pluck you from there. And I would.
And that's Jeconiah, right?
Yes.
It's shortened here.
Yes. And Jeconiah was the, what was the story of Jeconiah again? Because he's mentioned again here in verse 28. So people know exactly, because it was written of him that he shall be childless, or write this man childless.
Well, his sons were all destroyed.
Okay.
His sons were killed, and he was told he would never sit on his throne. This here is what we're about to read, is the curse of Jeconiah.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the return from Babylon, the high priests and not the seed of David ruled over the 70 weeks kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it quite, that they must have really understood this prophecy, because I really do find it quite remarkable that, so far as we know, not one of the house of David was left, and there were many of them left,
mm-hmm.
even tried to acquire the kingship at Jerusalem in the intertestamental period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Christ inherited the throne of David through his stepfather, Joseph. So technically, Christ was the heir of Jeconiah, but he wasn't of the seed of Jeconiah, right?
Right, right. And Mary, but Mary was still also a Judahite, so either
right,
way.
Right, but Mary came through the line of Nathan and
right.
not through Jeconiah.
Yes, very good. Okay, verse 25. And I will give you into the hand of them that seek your life, and into the hand of them whose face you fear, even into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of the Chaldeans. And I will cast you out, and your mother that bore you, into another country where you were not born, and there shall you die. Obviously, the question that I asked earlier is confirmed in two verses here, that none of the people who were taken alive to Babylon would return alive. Verse 27, but to the land whereto they desire to return, there shall they not return. Is this man Coniah a despised broken idol? Is he a vessel wherein is no pleasure? Wherefore are they cast out, he and his seed, and are cast into a land which they know not? O earth, 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 hear the word of Yahweh. Thus says Yahweh, write you this man, this is the verse here, write you this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days, for no man of his seed shall prosper, sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah. Okay, so actually the reason why I asked the question, because obviously Coniah did have descendants.
Well, right, but he may as well have not had them in the eyes of God, because
right.
they didn't come of anything, is what, you know, Yahweh's not going to use them for the line of kings
mm-hmm.
that they were promised to be.
Yes.
They had basically, he wrote them off, right?
Right. Yes.
And he had plans for them, because that line had to continue to exist in order to pass the scepter over Judah to Christ.
Yes.
But they didn't rule.
Yes. Yeah, because some people take this verse, this line of the verse, too literally, and say that, he had no children. Well, of course, he had to have children. Otherwise,
Joseph... Well, right. It's obviously a metaphor.
Yes, a metaphor.
It's not to be taken literally.
Yeah, write this man childless. It doesn't say he will be childless. Just write him childless, because none of his sons ever became king again.
Well, a man of means, I talked to one of my six children, right? I may as well be childless, except for that one son.
Mm-hmm.
If he was like the other five, I would consider myself childless. I would leave my estate to somebody else.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the way it is. But, I'm fortunate to have one son I could count on. That basically, that's what's being said. If I counted myself childless when I made out my will, that doesn't mean that I don't have children. It's just that I'm not acknowledging them, that they may as well not be children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they wouldn't do my will, because they wouldn't do comply with my wishes being the
right.
father.
Yes, and continuing the tradition of your forefathers, et cetera, right?
Absolutely.
Chapter 23, verse 1. Woe be to the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, says Yahweh. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim of Israel, against the pastors that feed my people, you have scattered my flock and driven them away, and have not visited them. Matthew chapter 25. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doings, says Yahweh, and I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries where I have driven them, and will bring them again to their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increase. Now, obviously, only some of these people were brought back from Babylon. So this verse, chapter 23, verse 3, is talking about all the countries where these Israelites have been scattered to, and they will be brought together into a single fold again.
Well, right. He's not talking at all about the 70 weeks kingdom.
Right.
The
yes.
70 weeks kingdom only existed, the 70 weeks nation, right? It wasn't really a kingdom. It only existed because Israel was to provide the sanctuary, but Judah was to provide the altar.
Right.
Israel, this is a matter of a prophecy in the Psalms, where Israel was to provide the sanctuary, that they were to be the dominion.
Mm-hmm.
Israel was to provide the dominion. And what a lot of people don't understand is that when Christ came, the Roman people, the world was split into three major areas: Rome, the Empire of Rome, Parthia, and the Scythians in the north. And all three of them were Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel basically ruled the world.
Right.
At the time that Judah provided the sanctuary, or the place where Christ was to be sacrificed.
Right, right. And Israel, by and large, has provided the kingdoms in which the house of Judah has reigned in spite of itself, right?
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
And here we see that that he would gather his remnant out of all places where he had driven them. He wouldn't gather them in Jerusalem, because Jeremiah, four chapters before this, prophecies that Jerusalem would never be made whole again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
so
indeed,
how could this be talking about literal Jerusalem in Palestine?
Right. Indeed, it was not. Those who returned from Babylon had their fits and starts, and sometimes they had good days, sometimes they had bad, or I should say years, right, or decades. And obviously it culminated with the Roman army destroying the temple, and then a few years later the Jews had their dispersion. All right, now let me read verse 3 again, because this is a great prophecy. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries where I have driven them, and will bring them again to their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increase. And, of course, this is not true of the Jews. We have always been a small population in the world. Verse 4, and I will set up shepherds over them, which shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed, neither shall they be lacking. Of course, this has not quite happened yet. We're almost there, folks. Verse 5, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will raise to King David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. Now, of course, this is a two-part prophecy, is it not, Bill?
Well, absolutely. Actually, I think that this is it's a proverb of a new kingdom. And Jeremiah 23, 7 and 8 do not appear in the Septuagint until the very end of chapter 23, following verse 40.
Really?
In the Septuagint.
Okay.
But yes, but this is a proverb of the old kingdom, and then it's a proverb of the new kingdom. It's a two-part prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And the promise of regathering and salvation for Israel, not in Palestine, but somewhere else, was made long after Israel was deported, and is one of a long string of prophecies which prove that the dispensationalists are basically fools.
Right, right. Well, I will raise to David a righteous branch, which obviously has to be a reference to Yahshua Messiah. However, he did not reign as king. So,
well, right, absolutely not.
Yes. So that Messiah did come, but he has yet to serve as king, which he will.
And I'm sorry, I'm ahead of you. I'm on verses 7 and 8. Yeah, yes. The branch, it is a matter of prophecies in the minor prophets. Bring forth my servant, the branch, I believe is Zechariah chapter 3, and it's definitely talking about Christ, who calls himself in the Revelation that the root and the branch of Jesse. And the only way he could be the root and the branch of Jesse is to be both Yahweh and Christ, right?
Okay, very good.
He refers to himself as the branch several times in the prophet.
The creator and the offspring, both. That's exactly what that verse means. And it's repeated. Were you quoting Revelation there?
Or, yes.
Okay, very good. All right, verse 6. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name whereby he shall be called Yahweh our righteousness. Therefore, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that they shall no more say, Yahweh lives, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but Yahweh lives, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country, and from all countries where I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. So here's a very specific prophecy. Of course, it was the 10 lost tribes with the two other tribes added to them that were out of the north country, right? Isn't this exactly what's being talked about here?
Well, it absolutely is. And I'm looking for the Hebrew of that Yahweh, our righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, let me repeat verse 8 while you're looking for that. But Yahweh, we will say, but Yahweh lives, which brought up and which led the seed out of the house of Israel, out of the north country. We're the only ones saying this. For a while, British Israel was saying it, but now they're teaching multiculturalism too. And from all countries where I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. Of course, it's only talking about Israelites here. It's not talking about a multicultural country or what have you, or, you know, a multicultural state. It's talking exclusively about Israelites.
Well, it is Yahweh, our righteousness in Hebrew. I wanted to verify that.
Uh-huh.
And it's I have Bible words here. And it's another prophecy that shows that Yahweh will be the Messiah, that there should be no doubt about that.
Okay.
And where in the Old Kingdom it was said that Yahweh brought us up out of the land of Egypt, when Christ returns, he says that he will gather the children of Israel from the north where they were driven, from all the places they were dispersed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very clear in the Revelation and in the letters of Paul and in the Gospels. And that is what this is talking about. When Christ said those words, he meant the same thing that Jeremiah means here.
Right, because he's gathering Israelites exclusively. He's not gathering other races or even, in this sense, even the other white nations that might have been Shemites but not Israelites, or Japhethites and Hamites, if there's any of those left around.
Well, if there are any of those left, right? I mean, we know we're told there'll be in a resurrection,
uh-huh.
But we don't know that there's any of them left,
right?
Especially from the male line, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure that all of us have some sort of Japhethite blood in us.
Okay.
Or blood from the other Shemitic tribes. I can't imagine that we don't, only because knowing that the amount of slaves that the Scythians took off from the Persians, the Medes, the Assyrians, the other Adamic nations,
mm-hmm.
and they traded in these slaves for thousands of years from these Slavic nations and these other Adamic nations. There were probably as many Slavs in Britain as there are in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least before World War One, right?
Right?
After World War One and World War Two, things got a little more mixed up in Germany.
Yeah.
But before the 20th century, I'm sure there were just as many people of Slavic descent in Britain as there were in Germany.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter because the Israelite nation is descended through the father, and we are allowed to marry non-Israelite wives as long as they're white.
As long as they're white Adamic wives, right? And we can't escape the prophecy that Shem, that Japheth would dwell in the tents of Shem.
Yes, exactly.
And if Japheth dwelt in the tents of Shem in Germany, well, history proves that he did in Britain, too. And the English word slave comes from the word Slav.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And Yahweh knows he's the one who does the selecting of the remnant, right? So it doesn't really matter if we know 100%. You know, what our own particular DNA is, as long as we're white and we're willing to work for the kingdom, that's all that really matters. Okay, very good. Verse 9, my heart within me is broken because of the prophets, these evil prophets. All my bones shake. I am like a drunken man. And like a, there's a lot of talk about beer in the chat room. I am like a drunken man and like a man whom wine has overcome. Because of Yahweh and because of the words of his holiness. For the
now, here we see again in this verse Jeremiah making a parenthetical statement, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
He did that several other times where he was talking about himself and his reaction to these prophecies that had come through Yahweh, and this is one of them.
Right, right. Very good. Verse 10, for the land is full of adulterers, for because of swearing the land mourns, as cursing and false promises, I'm sure. Because of swearing, the land mourns. The pleasant places of the wilderness are dried up, and their course is evil, and their force is not right. For both prophet and priest are profane. Yea, in my house have I found their wickedness, says Yahweh. And I'm thinking of John Hagee and all those rapture cultists, right? Prophet and priest are profane. Verse 12, wherefore their way shall be to them as slippery ways in the darkness. They shall be driven on and fall therein, for I will bring evil upon them, even the year of their visitation, says Yahweh. Of course, Yahshua said something very similar. He said, the blind lead the blind, and they all fall into the ditch. Verse 13, and I have seen folly in the prophets of Samaria. They prophesied in Baal and caused my people Israel to err.
And I like to comment on this. You know, Yahweh put up with the false prophets of Samaria for over 200 years.
Uh-huh.
From the time of Jeroboam, right? It's explained in 2 Kings 12, verses 28 through 32, that Jeroboam set up the golden calves and an entire false priesthood.
Right.
And for 200 years, the Israelites practiced paganism before they were taken away by the Assyrians.
Yeah.
And that's why they brought paganism to Europe, mm-hmm. and not Yahwism, not Hebrewism, right?
Exactly. Yes, yes. And, of course, these passages referring to the northern house of Israel, I mean, if you don't know this history about the migrations of the 12 tribes, these verses don't make any sense. You have to know this history. Verse 14, I have seen also in the prophets of Jerusalem a horrible thing. They commit adultery and walk in lies. They strengthen also the hands of the evildoers, just like our Anglo-Saxon politicians are strengthening the hands of our Jewish moneylenders. They strengthen also the hands of the evildoers, that none does return from his wickedness. They are all of them to me as Sodom, oh my goodness, and the inhabitants thereof as Gomorrah. Boy, does this apply to today or what?
Sounds like New York.
Yeah, yeah, but don't ask and don't tell, right? Verse 15, therefore, thus says Yahweh of hosts concerning the prophets, behold, I will feed them with wormwood, or bitterness.
Bitterness.
Yes, and make them drunk with the water of gall. For the prophets of Jerusalem is profaneness gone forth into all the land. And, of course, we could call it Judeo-Christianity. Verse 16, thus says Yahweh of hosts, hearken not to the words of the prophets that prophesy to you. They make you vain. They speak a vision of their own heart and not out of the mouth of Yahweh. They say, still to them that despise me, the Yahweh has said, you shall have peace, And they say to everyone that walks after the imagination of his own heart, no evil shall come upon you.
Well, how does this not sound like our politicians and priests and pastors of today?
Yeah, and
it absolutely sounds like it.
Yeah, they're always saying peace, peace, and all we have is war. Verse 18, for who has stood in the council of Yahweh and has perceived and heard his word? Who has marked his word and heard it? People, just as you said earlier, our people are not listening to the true word of God. Verse 19, behold, a whirlwind of Yahweh is gone forth in fury, even a grievous whirlwind, it shall fall grievously upon the head of the wicked. The anger of Yahweh shall not return until he have executed, until he have performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days you shall consider it perfectly. Wow. That is some prophecy right there. I hope we're considering it perfectly, with much better discernment than the rest, than Judeo-Christianity itself. Verse 21, I have not sent these prophets, yet they ran. I have not spoken to them, yet they prophesied. But if they had stood in my counsel and had caused my people to hear my words, then they should have turned them from their evil way and from the evil of their doings.
Even if your ministry is not commissioned by Yahweh like Jeremiah's is,
mm-hmm.
as long as you're teaching his way and his law, you'll be doing the right thing.
That's right.
Thank you.
Yes, right. Yeah, and of course, the vast majority of church. I mean, I have to give credit where credit is due. There are some ministries, some denominations that still teach obedience to the law, but they're very few and far between. Very few and far between. The vast majority of them have become dispensationalists, which teach that the law has been done away with, and they also teach multiculturalism unabashedly, unashamedly.
Well, that's a Jewish denomination.
That's right.
They must be Jewish.
That's right. They're practicing a form of Judaism, and they realize it not. Verse 23, am I a God at hand, says Yahweh, and not a God afar off? Well, he's both at hand and afar off.
Well, just as people think that today that he's far off or that he even doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, it's the same thoughts prevail at this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had a basically secular, scoffing people. Verse 24, can any hide himself in secret places that I shall not see him, says Yahweh? Do not I fill heaven and earth, says Yahweh? I have heard what the prophets said that prophesy lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed, I have dreamed, I have seen
Martin Luther Pond.
Yeah.
Martin Luther Pond had a dream.
Right, that's right. I have seen the Israelites or the Israelis of the Jewish state converted to Christianity, right? How many of these so-called Christian ministers have stated that? Verse 25, I have heard what the prophets said that prophesy lies in my name, saying, I have dreamed, I have dreamed. How long shall this be in the heart of the prophets that prophesy lies? Yea, they are prophets of the deceit of their own heart. Man, you don't hear these verses quoted in the churches today. Verse 27, which think to cause my people to forget my name. This is a major prophecy here. Which think to cause my people to forget my name by their dreams, which they tell every man to his neighbor, as their fathers have forgotten my name for Baal. So this, the disappearance of the name of Yahweh among the Israelites occurred in Jerusalem just prior to this deportation here. Because why? They were worshiping Baal instead of Yahweh.
Well, right, but even the northern tribes for 200 years before they were deported, they were worshiping Baal.
Yes.
And when they got to Europe, who were they worshiping?
Yeah.
Well, what do we find in Ireland? We find Baal worship, right?
That's right.
In France, among the Celts of France, what do we find? Baal worship.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's a coincidence.
Yeah, right. It's a total coincidence.
Lord.
Yeah.
Ogen is the equivalent of the Hebrew word Adon. I mean, the vowels were added later, right?
Right, right.
And it means Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, very good. Verse 28, the prophet that has a dream, let him tell a dream, And he that has my word, let him speak my word faithfully. What is the chaff to the wheat, says Yahweh? Is not my word like as a fire and like a hammer that breaks the rock in pieces? Therefore, behold, I am against the prophets, of course, the false prophets, says Yahweh, that steal my words, every one from his neighbor, that prevent us from hearing his word. Verse 31, behold, I am against the prophets that use their tongues and say, he says, speaking in Yahweh's name, of course, behold, I am against them that prophesy false dreams, says Yahweh, and do tell them, and cause my people to err by their lies and by their lightness. Yet I sent them not, nor commanded them. Therefore, that they shall not profit this people at all. And, of course, the Latter-day Church of Laodicea, the lukewarm church that we're living in right now, it fits this description perfectly. Verse 33. And when this people or the prophet or a priest shall ask you, saying, what is the burden of Yahweh? You shall then say to them, what burden? I will even forsake you. I will even forsake you, says Yahweh. And as for the prophet and the priest and the people that shall say, the burden of Yahweh, I will even punish that man and his house. Okay, so what's the complaint here? That the law of Yahweh is just too difficult to keep? And we don't feel like keeping it? Is that the burden being referred to here?
Well, you know, they haven't inquired. They have not acquired after Yahweh for all these years. Mm-hmm. So why should they inquire after him now?
Yeah.
You know, what right have they to ask him now?
Mm-hmm.
If for 200 years or 100 years you've been a licentious profligate society, if you've lived life in hedonism for 200 years and haven't inquired the ways of God, what right do you have at the moment of your punishment?
Right, exactly. And it's very reminiscent of the verse. I think it's Revelation 22, of one of the last verses in the entire Bible. If you are evil, stay evil still. If you are good, stay good still, because it's too late. Judgment is too close. And you're not going to change now, and I'm not going to have mercy on evildoers.
Well, right, and the prophets have been false prophets for how many generations
mm-hmm.
now? But there's been there was a return to Yahweh's ways at the days of Hosea, but this is 100 years after that.
That's right.
And they were screw-ups before Hosea.
Right.
And they're screw-ups now. And Josiah, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have no right to ask. Now's the time of their punishment. And our people don't understand it, but the same exact thing is going to happen to them if they don't distance themselves from this evil system. They're going to be caught up, come out from her, lest ye suffer her punishment.
That's right. Okay, verse 35. Thus shall you say, everyone to his neighbor and everyone to his brother, what has Yahweh answered, and what has Yahweh spoken? And the burden of Yahweh shall you mention no more, for every man's word shall be his burden, for you have perverted the words of the living God and of Yahweh of hosts, our God. Thus shall you say to the prophet, what has Yahweh answered you, and what has Yahweh spoken? But since you say, the burden of Yahweh, therefore thus says Yahweh, because you say this word, because you consider his word to be a burden, the burden of Yahweh, and I have sent to you, saying you shall not say the burden of Yahweh. Therefore, behold, I, even I, will utterly forget you, and I will forsake you, and the city that I gave you and your fathers, and cast you out of my presence. And I will bring an everlasting reproach upon you, and a perpetual shame which shall not be forgotten. Now, before we go into chapter 24, I just want to reiterate here that he is talking to his Judahite people. So obviously, there probably were some Edomites mixed in here, and it was probably the Edomites who taught these Judahites how to do evil, as it is the case today.
Well, right, but I believe that what he's saying is that those who despised Yahweh of his own people
mm-hmm.
would end up with the bad figs.
Okay.
Race mixed with the Canaanites of Palestine, and that's what we're going to see in the next chapter.
Right. Okay, let's continue. Chapter 24. Yahweh showed me, and behold, the baskets of figs were set before the temple of Yahweh. After that, Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away captive Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and the princes of Judah, with the carpenters and smiths from Jerusalem, and had brought them to Babylon. One basket had very good figs, even like the figs that are first ripe, and the other basket had very naughty figs, which could not be eaten. They were so bad. Okay, now
it's possible that these naughty figs are already race-mixed people.
Could be, sure.
All right, because we have the story of Daniel at this time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the story of Daniel, Daniel's taken to Babylon at Nebuchadrezzar and Nebuchadnezzar are the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
At 605 B.C., when Nebuchadnezzar first comes to Judea, and he takes off 1,000 of the princes of the city and brings them back to Babylon and expects Judah to be a subservient state, and they're not. 20 years later, it's destroyed, right? Because they keep screwing up and they're not paying the tribute to the Babylonians that they're supposed to, and he ends up destroying the city. But Daniel spends 20 years in Babylon in captivity before Jerusalem is destroyed, and we see in the story of Susanna that there are Canaanites who are claiming to be of the house of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel points them out and says, no, you're the seed of Canaan, you're not the seed of Judah.
Right.
So right there we see that there are people of the captivity who are bad figs. They're not really of the people of Judah, that they're Canaanites who are cloven to Judah or claiming to be Judah.
Yeah.
Or they're the infiltrators.
Yeah, infiltrators or the Judahites who took after their ways and joined them against Yahweh. And against
and even in the first century, a lot of them took after their ways and joined them and volunteered to kill Christ, right?
Yeah,
or rooted it on, cheered it on, that they partook of that.
Yes.
As if it was something good.
Right. And I want to contrast this to that fig tree that Yahshua cursed in the New Testament, because that was an entire tree. Here we're just talking about bad figs and good figs, right? But the entire tree was cursed by Yahshua in the New Testament, meaning that had to be Jews, because there was not a single good fig.
Yes, that was Jews, and there wasn't a single good fig.
That's right.
This is two baskets of figs. It's we see that both good and bad figs remain in Judah at this time,
mm-hmm.
and this does not include all of the good Judahites who had already been taken away by the Assyrians well over 100 years before this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those who claim, as the Ephraim Scepter heretics do, that all of Judah is bad, or that the Jews of that bad history represent Judah,
yes.
That those people are fools who get their religion from deceit and not from the Bible.
Yeah,
of Judah was race mixed, but only a portion of those who were among this remnant in Jerusalem were race mixed.
Well, they couldn't be good figs if they were race mixed, right? So obviously it's not applicable to Judah as an entire tree. But in the New Testament, Yahshua was cursing that Jewish tree, that Edomite tree, that had planted itself amongst the true Judahites of the days of John Hyrcanus, etc., right? So he was cursing that Jewish tree, no doubt about it. Okay, very good. Verse 3, then said Yahweh to me, what see you, Jeremiah? And I said, figs, the good figs, very good. And the evil, very evil, that cannot be eaten, they are so evil. Again, we're given a contrast between the good figs, obviously those Judahites who still were keeping the law, and bad figs who weren't keeping the law and who had probably race mixed as well. Okay. Verse 4.
Well, let me say that the figs that are so bad that they cannot be eaten, that I have to, that they invoke the memory in Jeremiah chapter 2 of the people whose sin was so bad that it couldn't be washed off, right? That it must be in their skin. That's why it can't be washed off.
Mm-hmm.
That the soap wouldn't wash the sin off from them. And that, to me, indicates that they were that plant that had become a strange plant to Yahweh, that they would erase mixed people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Then said Yahweh to me, what see you, Jeremiah? And I said, figs, and the good figs, very good, the evil, very evil. It cannot be eaten. They are so evil. Again, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah, whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldeans for their good. Okay, so
well, to separate them from these Canaanites, to get them away from these people.
Right, right.
If they continue independently in Jerusalem, in 100 years, they're all mixed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Yahweh removed the 10 northern tribes for the same reason, so that they sent them into the wilderness where they could no longer race mix because there are no Canaanites there.
And he said he would sift them like a sieve, like grain in a sieve through those nations that he sent them into.
Yes, very good. And again, this bears repeating because this is the difference. Now, and this is in Jeremiah. It can't be compared to that evil fig tree, because in Matthew, that whole fig tree is evil. The entire root, branches, stem, trunk, etc. is evil, that tree that Yahshua cursed. Verse 5 again. Chapter 24, thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah, whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldeans for their good. In other words, we have to accept our punishment. We have to, thereby we can repent. But if we refuse to accept our punishment for being evil, then there's no repentance being shown. Verse 6, for I will set my eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land, land of Judah, and I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up. And I will
Go ahead. I have some notes on this one. I don't even have notes from this one. This is mostly off the cuff, but I have to answer this one.
Okay.
This is first, these people that would be planted and not plucked up, right, and that are set for good, they are the remnant of the good seed from which came most of the people of the 70-week nation who returned with Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah to rebuild the city and the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell people that there are no good Jews after the time of Christ, they point to this verse.
Right.
Well, if they would only understand what happened in Judea and what this verse is saying they're going to be planted and not plucked up, but it's not saying that they're going to be forever identified as Judah,
mm-hmm.
right? Or as Jews, which is really ridiculous, right?
Right.
Basically, the good Judah in Palestine at the time of Christ became Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And once they became Christians, they lost their identity as Judah. They lost their identity as Judeans. That's why Paul said, you are all one in Christ. You are not Judeans and Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
You're all Christians. That's how they began to identify themselves, and they totally lost their identity as Judeans.
Right, right. Well, then let me repeat the second half of the verse, and I will build them, and Christianity has been built up through these Judahites, right? Didn't Yahshua come to Judah first and not pull them down?
I will save the tents of Judah first, yes.
Yes, and not pull them down. We're still here, right? And I will plant them and not pluck them up. Well, they maybe were moved because they were Christians, but the Christianity was not plucked up. Christianity was planted, and it still exists today. So, it's hard. This last term, and not pluck them up, you can't assume that's meaning that those Judahites who returned to Judah never moved again. He didn't.
Well, if the next verse says, and I will give them a heart to know me. If they had a heart to know him, they must have changed to Christianity
right.
at the time of Christ.
Yeah. He didn't pluck them up as a people, but obviously our people have been moving around for centuries, for millennia. Verse 7, and I will give them a heart to know me, that I am Yahweh, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God. For they shall return to me with their whole heart. Okay, and that's the good figs. All right? And as the evil figs, which cannot be eaten, they are so evil. Surely, thus says Yahweh, so will I give Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and his princes, and the residue of Jerusalem that remain in this land, and them that dwell in the land of Egypt, and I will deliver them to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth for their hurt, to be a reproach and a proverb, a taunt and a curse in all places where I shall drive them. So obviously what we're talking about here is more than likely race-mixed Judahites with a good substantial portion of Edomite blood in them. And even if they didn't, the fact that they associated with Edomites made them evil figs.
Well, right. I have quite a few notes on this.
Okay.
If you want to read 10 first.
Okay, I'll finish 10. And I will send the sword, the famine, and the pestilence among them till they be consumed from off the land that I gave to them and to their fathers.
Yeah, you know, these wicked Judahites were punished, and these ended up rejecting Christ and joining themselves to the Edomites.
Mm-hmm.
This punishment could not have been fully fulfilled until 70 AD.
Right.
These people, these bad figs, and the Edomites that were folded into Judea later, and any of the bad figs or any of the people of Judah that rejected Christ later, they have all, that they're today, they're all bastards. None of them are true Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And this promise that Yahweh would make his enemies a curse and drive them into all nations, as we will see, I would like to quote three other scriptures, what was not fulfilled until after 70 AD. It is repeated in Jeremiah 26:6 and Jeremiah 29:17-9, and it's cited by Yahshua at Luke 21, verses 20 through 24, and I would like to read them.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah 26:6 says, then I will make this house like Shiloh and will make this city a curse to all the nations of the earth. He's separating the house and the city,
uh-huh.
Right? The house like,
yes.
Shiloh, that means peace. And the city is going to be a curse to all the nations of the earth. It has been ever since.
That's right.
How could Christians today support that city? It's just suicidal. It's crazy.
Right.
It's voluntarily giving yourself over to the devil. That's what Christians today are doing, that these mainstream Judeo-Christians. Right.
Absolutely.
Jeremiah 29:17 through 19 say, thus says Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will send upon them the sword and the famine, and we'll see the context of this maybe next week, and the pestilence, and will make them like vile figs that cannot be eaten. They are so evil, and I will persecute them with the sword, with the famine, and with the pestilence, and will deliver them to be removed to all the kingdoms of the earth to be a curse and an astonishment and a hissing and a reproach among all the nations where I drove them. When you see a Jew, you're supposed to have this reaction to them if you're a Christian. Because they have not hearkened to my word, says Yahweh, which I sent unto them by my servants, the prophets, rising up early and sending them, but you would not hear, says Yahweh. Luke 21, Christ says, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then you know that her desolation has come near. Then those in Judea must flee into the mountains, and those in the midst of her must leave the land, and those in the countryside must not enter into her. Let me say that all the Christians in Jerusalem by 70 AD, as Josephus attests, the good people fled the city. The noble people, Josephus says, fled the city. The Christians would have fled because they had this warning of Christ.
Right.
The Jews never had this warning of Christ because they wouldn't hear his words.
Right.
And Christ says, because these are the days of vengeance by which all the things written are to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of the preterists say, you see, all prophecy is over. But in context, it means all the things written concerning Jerusalem,
right,
and this prophecy of Jeremiah are to be fulfilled.
That's,
let's
right,
take this in context. Woe to those having conceived and to those with sucklings in those days, for there shall be great violence upon the earth and wrath upon this people, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and they shall be taken away captive into all nations. Christ is merely paraphrasing Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerusalem shall be tread upon by the heathens, I translated, or it could be nations, until the times of the nations should be fulfilled. So there we see Christ paraphrasing Jeremiah. This prophecy had its final fulfillment in 70 AD. Anybody who came out of Jerusalem after 70 AD and calls themselves a Jew is an Edomite and a Canaanite.
Mm-hmm.
They are all bad figs. None of them could ever be any good.
Right, right. And another mistake that even the British Israelites make is that they falsely equate prophetic Jerusalem with literal Jerusalem, right? And they actually think that the literal city of Jerusalem is going to be built up, when these verses you quoted absolutely deny that. So they don't make a distinction between Jerusalem being in prophecy the people of Judah and, of course, all Israel, and the literal city. They don't make that distinction. And that's one good thing that Sheldon Emery did was he said the New Jerusalem is not the old Jerusalem. We're talking the New Jerusalem is the people of Israel. Israel
absolutely.
Is a people,
it's
not
the
a people place.
And the seat of their government, absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Wherever the people of Yahweh is, there's Jerusalem and there's Zion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. All right, chapter 25. Oh, yeah, and actually it reminds me that this is the episode when those Judahites, those Christian Judahites, were able to escape. That occurred during the pause in the assault on the city of Jerusalem under Titus, right, General Titus? And I think you say that's about a year long, so they had a year to think about getting out of the city of Jerusalem.
Well, there was actually two. There was another Roman general that, now you could probably, somebody will probably correct me on this. I don't really remember his name. I think it was Cestius. It's buried in my notes in Josephus. The other Roman general had Jerusalem under siege. And even Josephus thought he was only days from taking the city when, for absolutely no known reason,
mm-hmm.
he lifted the siege and headed for Syria.
Okay. For Syria.
And Josephus can't explain why. Josephus said he doesn't know why. He lifted the siege of Jerusalem and headed to Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a couple of years later that Titus comes back and destroys the city.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
But Josephus says that in the meantime, all of the noble people of the city fled.
Okay.
So we see now this is the proof of the validity of Luke's gospel.
Right.
Okay?
And Jeremiah's prophecy too, yes.
And Jeremiah's prophecy, yes. But the way Luke described it, when you see Jerusalem encompassed with armies, know that her desolation is near,
mm-hmm.
and those who are in the city must flee. Okay? Well, how could you flee if it's encompassed with armies?
Right.
Even the people in the city are going to think you're a traitor, and they're not going to let you out.
Yeah.
They're going to kill you.
Yeah,
while
the siege is underway, exactly, yes.
Right. You cannot flee while the siege is underway. Christ would have never expected that. And Luke's gospel was fulfilled in history exactly
mm-hmm.
the way it was written, which means that Luke was recording faithfully the words of Christ, and that's a mark of the prophet, that his prophecy came true,
mm-hmm.
and we can never despise, the Paul bashers despise Luke's gospel to their own demise.
Right. Very good, very good. Okay, chapter 25, verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that was the first year of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, the which Jeremiah the prophet spoke to all the people of Judah and to all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, okay, so this verse alone tells us that the people of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, meaning there probably were some Edomites, and of course, the city of Jerusalem was probably the New York City of its time, because Jerusalem sat at the crossroads of these various trade routes coming from Egypt and then going up into Asia Minor and then on into Asia proper, right? And
well, it was recognized that Jerusalem was probably the most significant city in the Roman world after Rome itself.
Uh-huh.
There were 2 million people inhabiting Jerusalem,
yes,
in the Herodian period.
So it was truly a multicultural paradise at this time, no doubt
about
it. Well,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Christ isn't going up to some little temple in some small town.
Right, right.
No, he's going to the equivalent of what would be the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
But when he goes to the temple.
So, yeah, Jerusalem was a very important city at this time, and even today it still has that function of being a crossroads city. Verse 3, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even to this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of Yahweh has come to me, and I have spoken to you, rising early and speaking, but you have not listened. And Yahweh has sent to you all his servants, the prophets, rising early and sending them. In other words, giving us fair warning. But you have not listened, nor inclined your ear to hear. They said, turn you again now, every one, from his evil way and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that Yahweh has given to you and to your fathers forever and ever. Now, this is what he's saying that we should do. If we were obeying his law, we would dwell there forever and ever. But we haven't, so we're not. Verse 6, and go not after other gods to serve them and to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. Verse 7, yet you have not hearkened to me, says Yahweh, that you might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Therefore, thus says Yahweh of hosts, because you have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, and Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land, and against the inhabitants thereof, and against all these nations round about, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment, and a hissing, and perpetual desolations. Now, I think it's interesting that these Edomites who had actually, and you mentioned earlier that these Edomites participated in the siege of Jerusalem in, what, 586 B.C.? Is that the timetable we're talking about
here? Yes, 586 B.C.
And that the Edomites actually helped the Babylonians in tearing down the walls and attacking the people of Israel. I really have to hand it to the Jews that even though they are our perpetual enemy, they have convinced the world by adopting some of the, how should I put it, the ritual.
Well, they give the Torah lip service, right?
Right.
And they adopted service. Some of the ritual. But the ritual is that they haven't perpetuated the sacrifices. They use the excuse that there's no temple, right?
Right, right. Yeah, but actually they still do. As you pointed out on Thursday's show, it's the chicken thing, right?
They twirl chickens, right?
And they sacrifice those chickens. They still do that today. And they still sacrifice goats, too. So,
but where do we see chicken twirling in the Old Testament?
Right. So they have obviously created their own traditions, but they have successfully impersonated Judah by at least claiming not to worship idols, right? They claim not to have idols, but we know they probably do. And I've been in the past when I've worked for Jewish customers, I've seen their paintings of Cain being driven from the Garden of Eden, right? They know who they are. And they have to know who they are in order to perpetuate the lie that they're Judah. They can't let their guard down. They can't allow themselves to slip up and expose the fact that they're not Judah but Edomites, right? So this requires constant vigilance, because the charade, the con game that they're pulling off, the con artist can't let his guard down, otherwise his con game is exposed, right? And so this is just one of the tricks they use, that they pretend not to be idol worshipers, and they pretend not to have images, right? But I can guarantee you, every rabbi has an image of his favorite rabbi on his wall, right?
Well, what's that six-pointed star? Is that not an image?
Yes, that's an image. It sure is. How about that flag they wave around? That's an image. That's a symbol. That's idol worship. So, they're not, again, it's false psychology, but they have to perpetuate this false psychology lest the Christians understand what the con game is all about. And so, but they have successfully, they have adopted Hebrew names, or at least Hebrew-sounding names, right, like Shmuel, right? And they have a menorah, although it's a nine, you know, pointed menorah, not a seven pointed menorah like the Bible says, right? And as you said, they distort, they pervert everything. Yet, because our people do not know any of the history of their own people, they're able to pull off this charade, and the Christian Israelites simply swallow it whole. Verse 10, moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. So I think we can hold off right here at verse 11, because this is the actual prophecy of the 70 years that is going to come. There's a lot of verses left in chapter 25.
Well, good, because I didn't think we'd get this far, right?
Okay, let's move on.
That basically the 70 years was from 586 to 516 B.C. And in 516 B.C., Zerubbabel set out with the original 42,000 returnees. And it's the same returnees that are recorded in Ezra and Nehemiah.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're basically both recording a past event when they write that list out. And that happened, and the temple commenced rebuilding in 516.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended the 70 years of desolation.
Right. I think we can end by, there's a question in the chat room. Someone is saying that Jesus baptized an Ethiopian. First of all, Jesus did not baptize anybody. It says
right.
that he let his disciples do it. So he got baptized by John, and then he let his disciples do the baptizing of the other people.
First, the Ethiopian was a Judean. He was coming back from the temple during one of the feasts when Philip met him. He was not an Ethiopian by race. He was a Judean by race
who
had just come back from the temple. Nobody but a Judean would come back from the temple on a feast day when the three major feasts of the year required all the men of Judah
mm-hmm.
to appear in the temple.
Right.
Second,
right.
he was already reading Old Testament scripture from Isaiah when Philip encountered him.
Right.
Third, he was in the employ of Queen Candace of the Ethiopians, who was white.
Yeah.
The Ethiopians of the time, most of them were white. They were Greeks that
right.
had colonized Ethiopia, just like the Greeks that colonized Egypt.
Yeah, like
Queen Candace is well recorded in history. She had an uprising and a fight against Augustus Caesar about 30 years before the time of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And that same queen is recorded at length in Strabo. The area of Gaza is a Persian word that means treasury. And this man that was in the employ of the queen of Ethiopia probably worked at the storehouses, the warehouses of Gaza, where
right.
a lot of trade was what was taking place between nations.
Yeah.
And that's probably what he was doing there.
Right. And Commander says, and no Negro would have been given great authority. A Negro who had attempted to enter the temple would have been killed on sight.
Yes.
Would have been killed on sight. That would never have been permitted.
And right. He had to be a Judean.
He had to be a Judean. Yeah. And then there's
he was returning from the temple for the feast.
Right. And archaeologists have recovered the signs on the temple that state, you know, any non-Judahite, right, any person who's not of the tribe or race of Judah would be subject to the penalty of death. If he crossed.
Well, that's why they tried to claim that Paul was subject to the penalty of death, because they made the false claim that he had brought Greeks into the temple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, of course, Peter didn't realize that many of these Greeks were actually Israelites. And he didn't understand the
mind. Well, right, but still, they weren't circumcised. They weren't allowed to
right.
the temple, according to the Judeans.
Right, yeah.
And
there
Paul
were no,
was accused.
There were no circumcised blacks, right? That just didn't happen. Yeah. Yeah. So, and this word Ethiopian, because in modern terminology it means blacks, doesn't mean it meant blacks in those days or ever up until that time, right? Because it comes from the word isn't it? It comes from the word Cush. And the Cushites were white people. It just happens that that country was named after a white man. And one of the translations of the word Cush is Ethiopian.
Well, Ethiopian actually means sunburned face. That's
sunburned, okay. Right.
I've proven that in the Race of Genesis 10 paper on my Yes, a lot of the original Cushites of Ethiopia were overrun by Nubians.
Right.
But Ethiopia was a geographical distinction at that time, and many Greeks had settled there.
Yes.
There's no proof that this man was black simply because he was an Ethiopian. The text itself proves that he was a Judean.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he wouldn't have been in the temple for the feast.
Right. And guest 28 reminds us that the Ethiopian cannot change the color of his skin, nor can the leopard change its spots, right? So, yeah, very good.
Well, right, but that was actually originally said by Jeremiah.
Okay, very good. All right, excellent. Well, for all of you who are still planning on partying, since this is the last day of 2010, enjoy yourselves, but don't enjoy yourselves too much, right? We're not supposed to get drunk. We're not supposed to cause riots wherever we go. We're supposed to live in peace among our brethren. So have a good evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
I have a couple of things I'd like to say. First, I've had problems with my radio streams, and those problems are cleared up, and I'm still working on them, but they're cleared up. The radio streams will be fine very shortly, and the one stream is all fixed up, but the other one I'm still working on resampling some of my audios. The problem stemmed from some of the audios being at different sample rates, and the server not being able to switch for some reason.
Oh,
I don't know why, because I told it that it's a variable sample rate, but it doesn't listen to me, right? Well, that's the first announcement. The second announcement, tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern time, Matt and Cheryl will be renewing their vows on the TeamSpeak server at ChrisTegenia.net. If you do not know how to get there, or if you haven't been there, go in your browser to ChrisTegenia.net and go to the Connect tab. At the top is a link that says Connect, and that is the instructions for how to get to the TeamSpeak server. The third announcement is that I will be there after this program, like I am just about every night. If anybody wants to forsake Dick Clark, that they can figure out how to connect to the ChrisTegenia TeamSpeak server and join us tonight. And we'll see what's happening.
Yeah. Maybe that ball will just crash right into the ground at Times Square. That would be funny to see that. Okay. Thank you all for listening. And I hope you can join us for the wedding ceremony tomorrow at 1 Eastern, 12 Central. And then, of course, tomorrow night we'll be back with Yahweh's Covenant People. We'll be continuing our study on the Book of Revelation. And thank you all for listening. Thank you, Bill. And Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise y'all.
Praise
y'all.